stimulation for your brain. This is the Lisa Wexler Show on WICC 600 AM and 107.3 FM.
I want to thank Attorney Crossland and the family and the thousands of others for reaching out and asking the questions that needed to be asked and that still need answers.
Speaking on camera about the Lauren Smith Fields and Brenda Lee Rawls cases for the first time ever in an exclusive interview with News 12 Connecticut, Bridgeport Mayor Joe Ganim expressing, quote, extreme disappointment with the leadership of the Bridgeport Police Department, saying he finds, quote, actions they've taken up to this point unacceptable.
I've now directed Deputy Chief Baraha of the Bridgeport Police Department to immediately put on leave the two officers who are the subject of the Bridgeport Internal Affairs investigation and disciplinary action for their lack of sensitivity to the public and their failure to follow police procedure in the handling of these two matters.
It just hurts so bad without my daughter here.
News 12 Connecticut broke the story December 22nd about the untimely death of Lauren Smith Fields, a beloved local college student who ended up dead after meeting up with, quote, an older white man she met on the dating app Bumble. Then 3 days later,
we want to know why our sister was treated like a Jane Doe.
News 12 breaking a strikingly similar story about 53-year-old Brenda Lee Rawls, who authorities say was also found dead the same day in the same neighborhood by a different man she had gone out with on the same night. In both cases, the family saying they weren't notified by police and alleging investigators were racially insensitive.
I had the opportunity to sit with both families.
Ganim now pledging to those families to take corrective action.
Effective immediately, both Detective Lanos, Detective Cronin are suspended from duties and put on administrative leave from the Bridgeport Police Department until such time as the OIA investigation and disciplinary cases have been completed.
Joining us now is Frank Recchia.
Lauren's story quickly made.
And we want to thank Frank. First of all, let me just thank you for this coverage, for bringing these stories to light. I'm going to thank you on behalf of the entire news reporting media in our Southern Connecticut area, and particularly here on WICC, because I think that your reporting is the kind of reporting that is achieving results for families, and the rest of the community is looking on and hopeful that these families are going to be treated with respect and get some answers about what happened to their loved ones. So thank you for that.
Thank you, Lisa. Thank you for having me.
So, Frank, that was a marvelous, we call it package in the business, but that was a marvelous report that you gave. Are there any further developments that you can tell us about either one of these cases?
Well, I think what we're looking at now is what's going to happen next. Of course, things are starting to change. The mayor, even before making this statement, this dramatic statement on Sunday, exclusively on News 12 Connecticut, then later to other media and worldwide, even before that, he had begun to see the full impact of what our report brought to light, because he changed the protocol, the death notification protocol. And then, of course, with the suspension of these two detectives who were involved with these investigations, I think going forward, it will be very interesting to see. We're all waiting eagerly to see what's going to happen next with the DEA coming in to assist with the investigation. Now, I think a dramatic shift in events and what I believe prompted Mayor Ganim to make that statement. That was kind of a dramatic mea culpa moment for him. We don't see that every day. Politicians rarely go on television and say, I'm sorry. Those are not words you hear every day from a politician. So it really reflected, I think, his sincere wish to move forward. But the DEA investigation is what we're looking at. And, of course, what's going to happen with the leadership at the Bridgeport Police Department. It's very much in flux right now. I know there are a lot of people eager to see if somebody will step in. The acting chief is temporarily out. We were told on a pre-scheduled vacation. It'll be very interesting to see if she returns, and if she does not return, who sits in that chair. until the national search is complete.
I mean, Rebecca Garcia is the acting police chief. She's under target or investigation with a civil suit going on about whether or not she was qualified to be the acting police chief. But the fact that she's, quote, away, as reported in the Connecticut Post yesterday, I thought was just a stunning statement, because I don't care what your vacation plans are. If you have something like this exploding under your watch, you would cancel your vacation typically and hang around unless you were asked not to.
Absolutely. And I think something that really needs to be said, and as the reporter, we at News 12 Connecticut broke this story, which is having such a dramatic impact on so many people's lives. But, you know, in the same breath, I think it's very important to say, Lisa, that there are so many, the vast majority of police officers, anybody who puts a uniform on and goes and works a life of public service, these are, by and large, good people. That's been my experience in 30 years of reporting. And what breaks my heart is that their work gets eclipsed by the mistakes of a few. I mean, if there is a pattern there, if it's systemic, by all means, root it out. But in the same breath, we need to stop and say thank you to law enforcement, to firefighters, anybody who puts on a uniform. These are good people, good inclinations, and we just want to say thank you to all of them. And it's heartbreaking to see that this dark shadow falls upon them as well due to the actions of a few.
I think that your point is very well taken yesterday. We're chatting with Frank Recchi of News 12. When I was saying yesterday and talking about the facts of the case, the coverage is now so much about the police, but the police didn't cause these deaths. The police are not, in other words, the way the police reacted to these deaths is getting a lot of focus. But let's remember, it's not the police's fault that these two women died. And so we've got to also circle back and find out, why did they die? How did they die? Like, what happened to them? That's really for the families, ultimately and forever. That's the big question.
It is. And I think what does need to change, and it is already changing, is at that department, is that death notification protocol is so important, because I've been reporting at News 12 for so many years, and very often it's my phone that rings at 3, 4, 5 o'clock in the morning. And I try to always take these calls when somebody has died. And I have heard this complaint before. This isn't the first time. I think what's so remarkable about this case is you have two cases on the same day, both of which we broke and reported exclusively, but they happened. That's what brings to light this incredible coincidence, is what makes this so notable. But I have heard this complaint before.
So this is something that needed to change probably a long time ago.
Yes.
And Brenda Lee Rawls, my reading of her bio, you may have investigated more, we're chatting with Frank Recchi of News 12, is that she was a woman very much a part of her community. She volunteered for the homeless. She was a regular churchgoer. It's a mystery. I mean, what happened to her? Do we know?
Well, we saw the autopsy report, but I think until there's a full and dispassionate probe involving a federal agency, you need to bring in a completely objective investigative entity. And that's what the family of Brenda Lee Rawls, the second woman, was asking for in our report on Sunday. They say it's not enough to have the DEA come in and assist Bridgeport police. They want a wholly separate investigative agency to probe this matter and to get definitive answers. You know, the medical examiner did issue the cause of death as the intoxication from fentanyl, but that was
Lauren. Was that Brenda also?
No. Brenda, I apologize. In Brenda's case, we don't know.
We don't know yet, right? We don't know anything.
No, we do not know.
Right. We don't know. That's and she was a relatively young woman. She was in her early 50s. What happened to her? Did she have a heart attack? I mean, what happened to her? We don't know.
It's my understanding. I remember sitting with them on Christmas Day. I will never forget. It was such a sad moment. They all joined hands and said a prayer. And I remember saying to them, and nobody was paying attention to these cases at the time. We were the only one reporting them. And I remember saying, you know, what about an autopsy? Can we get an autopsy? And they said, no, she's been cremated. So I don't know all Yeah, so there was no crime scene or scene preserved. So the integrity of the evidence has been wholly violated. It was ignored. Forget violating it. It just wasn't secured. It doesn't exist. There's nothing there. So as you know, as a great legal mind, that the chain of evidence has been destroyed. There's nothing there to work with.
Not if the body is cremated and there was no implication of anything. Do we know anything about Brenda's overall health condition? I mean, was she somebody with a predilection for heart disease or diabetes or something? Do we know?
I was told when I met with the family, lovely people, when I met with them, very good, great, wonderful, warm people, to see their heartbreak. They said that she was, I believe, a U.S. postal worker for 20 years. In the field of public service, hard worker. They said she was in excellent health. And so they were shocked when they got that news that she was dead at 53. We don't know. We may never know. And
we
that's the tragedy
know.
Here.
Yeah. And then going back to Lauren Smith Field's case, the so-called crime scene, which was automatically a suspect death, in other words, the woman dies. She's only 23 years old. She has something on the bottom of her nose, a little bit of blood. I mean, any decent police officer looking at that should have treated that as a potential crime scene. I don't care how quote unquote nice the guy was that called up. And yet we're told, and it was your reporting, that 10 days later, the family finally got into the apartment. They find a condom with semen in it. They find blood on sheets. No one has preserved the evidence. Frank Recchia, please, come on.
Nobody is standing up in this case. I have not reported on anybody standing up and say, you're wrong, you're not paying attention to the facts. No, everybody seems to concede at this point that the ball was dropped. The ball was dropped here, and apparently twice. And the mayor acknowledged it himself.
All right, so we're going to get the feds in. We'll keep on this story. Frank Recchia, I understand you've also been on Court TV, and you've been reporting there. Have they taken an interest in this? The state, this case has made all kind of national news, CNN, all different news reports. Are you surprised, Frank Recchia, that your original reportage has gotten, has become a nationwide international story?
Not when you consider what took place. And I'm glad that the world was paying attention, because I remember sitting Christmas Day and sitting with that second family and thinking, this is not right. I hope people are paying attention. So my prevailing feeling about all this worldwide publicity of the News 12 Connecticut reporting is that, thank God, people were listening.
Yeah, we're going to keep listening. I want to thank you, Frank Recchia, for coming on the show today. We'll keep watching you on News 12, and we'll be paying attention to the case as well. Thank you so much for your reporting.
Thank you, Lisa.
We'll be right back. We're going to chat with an extraordinary adventurer, one of the bravest people I've ever read about, a National Geographic author joining us in just a moment to talk about his unbelievable climbs of the world's tallest mountains in the world. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.